hadn't buried them among their own respectable townspeople. Hiram had been a murderer. I wasn't surprised that they wouldn't want him in their cemetery. But Obadiah had been his victim. Why had they buried him outside of the fence? And even worse, right next to the man who had killed him. Gingersnap started another round of barking, which prompted Trixie and Casper to join in. "Shh, you're noisy enough to wake the dead." At that exact moment, I caught a movement in the trees. A shiver shuttled through me. It was probably only a deer. But wouldn't I have heard a deer prancing away through the dry leaves? Only the youngest, most naive deer would stick around with this barking. I was letting all the talk of ghosts get to me. Still, I felt as though someone was watching us. Many of the leaves had fallen, but the evergreens still provided a dense, dark thicket. Nonsense. I was being silly because I was in a graveyard. Of course, that didn't explain the dog's behavior. Come on! Holding their leashes, I turned quickly and bounded through the cemetery as fast as I could go, watching my step and dodging around grave markers. When we reached the gate, I glanced up and screamed. 22. Holmes opened the gate for us. "You're running like you saw the devil himself. Where did you come from?" He was as calm as a summer sky. "Across the street. I'm supposed to meet Doc Kilgore and some of the guys here to set up for the celebration tonight." I peered at him. "Are you sure you weren't in the woods trying to spook me?" His gaze shot over my head to the woods. "I would never do that." "Yeah, right. So it was you." "Honest, Holly, I just got here. It was probably a deer." "That's what I thought, too. But they have trouble not making any noise when they leap away." Holmes couldn't hide his grin. "You're so skittish. The next thing I know, you'll be telling me you've changed your mind and that you believe in ghosts." "Speaking of ghosts, do you know why Obadiah is buried outside the cemetery?" "Sure. He murdered Hiram." "Duh. Obadiah couldn't have murdered Hiram because he was already dead." "Ah, but they saw the ghost of Obadiah delivering the snakes that killed Hiram, remember?" "That's stupid. I'd rather not think our ancestors would fall for something like that." Holmes laughed, a nice, hearty laugh that always warmed my heart. "Shh, I wouldn't say that quite so loud out here in the cemetery where they'll hear you." "Very funny." Several golf carts drove up, laden with supplies. I waved goodbye to Holmes and turned to leave. "Hey, Holly," he called. "You're coming tonight, right?" How could a girl turn down that kind of heartfelt invitation? "You bet. Wouldn't miss it." Not if Holmes would be there, I wouldn't. Maybe it would be fun. Maybe Oma and Rose were right. I just needed to loosen up a little bit and enjoy the spirit of the season. When we returned to the Sugar Maple Inn, I removed all the leashes from the dogs. They descended upon Eva, Felix, Mark, Grayson, and Ben, who were relaxing in the sitting room with glasses of wine. "I see you all met Ben." "They've been telling me about their ghost-hunting adventures," he said. Eva waved at me. "Look at this. Isn't it the cutest?" She beckoned me to the huge window. Twinkletoes and Mrs. Muir lay side by side, fast asleep. They weren't touching, but given a little more time together, they might even snuggle. "I thought this might be a boring trip for Mrs. Muir, but she's having the time of her life. Who thought she would make a friend? I'm just glad they're not hissing at each other anymore. Zelda told me about the GPS collar. Is it okay to let Mrs. Muir run around the inn? I'll be out part of the night at your aunt's house." "Sure, no problem. We'll look after her." "If you see her in the library, you might want to shoo her out of there. She's been known to shred books and newspapers." We tiptoed away from the sleeping kitties just in time to see Officer Dave arrive. He looked straight at us. "Eva Chevalier, I'd like to have a word with you, please.
Brian.
She barely breathed his name.
This is Brian's doing.
Mark jumped up from his seat.
What's this about, Dave?
Eva didn't do anything.
Dave kept a poker face, but his gaze locked on Mark for a hair too long.
I'd like to speak with you privately, Eva.
Excuse us, please.
Eva and Mark exchanged a fearful glance. Dave followed Eva to her room in the cat wing. Mark's chest heaved with each breath he took. He kept his eyes on Eva. We all trailed behind Dave and Eva. When the door to her room closed, we waited in the inn library.
Ben whispered,
I feel like I missed something. What did Eva do?
Nothing,
barked Mark. In a softer tone, he repeated,
Nothing.
Brian saw Eva outside the inn the night that Mallory was murdered, I murmured. Doc would be furious when he learned about this.
Brian doesn't know what he's talking about, Mark snarled. I never should have put him in the mix of ghost hunters. He's just retaliating because Eva caught him in some underhanded ghost tricks.
Which you knew would happen, said Felix. Makes for good TV. People like conflict. But it's not fair of him to lie about Eva and imply that she was mixed up in Mallory's death somehow.
A little shuffle behind us drew our attention. A cameraman bounded in our direction.
Where are they?
Mark held up his hand. We're not shooting this. Brian thundered toward us.
You just said conflict makes good TV. Wish we could see her face. Was she panicked?
You're a worm, Brian. The lowest of the low. Mark seethed with disgust.
Oh. It's okay to make money off me by putting me on the hot seat and wrecking my reputation. That didn't seem to bother you so much, Mr. High and Mighty. But now that it's Eva in the middle of the controversy...
You twit. This has nothing to do with the show. I will not allow it to become a sick drama about Mallory's death. Mark's eyes flashed with anger.
Really, Mr. Big Shot Author? Why not? Where were you when your girlfriend was drowning?
I wouldn't be so bold about accusing other people if I were in your shoes.
What's that supposed to mean?
Felix stepped between them. Hey, guys, let's not start attacking each other. We're all friends, okay? We need to stick together.
It was Brian who seemed the most put out. Trixie placed her paws on his thigh and nuzzled his pocket for treats. He pushed her away.
What's wrong with your dog? I don't have any dog treats.
Mark kept a vigilant and worried eye on the door to Eva's room. Grayson had stayed out of the argument, but he stood by with his friends. I excused myself, but before I walked away, Felix said,
Would you like to join us for dinner tonight? Ben is coming, then we're going to walk over to the cemetery.
Sounds great. I just need to check in with my grandmother. I walked toward her office with Trixie trotting ahead of me. I had risen early so I could get to work, but I hadn't done a thing for the inn all afternoon. Oma wasn't in the office, so I walked upstairs to her apartment. She answered the door in a chic pantsuit with a jacket reminiscent of Chanel.
Wow, where are you off to?
Oma smiled coyly.
Dinner at the Blue Boar?
I suspected that the charming chef who owned the posh restaurant had a bit of a crush on my sweet Oma.
Is Rose going too?
You would like to join us, perhaps?
Doc would be coming when he finishes helping at the cemetery. Is it my imagination, or is there a spark between them?
Oma nodded. It would be nice, no. Doc and Rose have been widowed for a long time.
Like me. Doc has a daughter who lives in Florida and never visits. Such a pity. We miss them so much. She bestowed a beautiful smile upon me.
I'm so glad I have you, Liebchen.
She hugged me with a fervor that I knew came from deep within her.
So would you like to come with us?
And bring Ben? I teased. Thanks, but I thought I'd go out with some of the ghost hunters.
I just came by because I feel so guilty for not helping out more here today.
No, I didn't notice. Some days are like that. Other days will be so crazy busy you might regret your decision to move here. You have fun with the young people tonight, Liebling. It will do you good. I will see you later at the cemetery?
Absolutely. I left thinking I would make up for it tomorrow. It bothered me not to pull my weight. Still, I had only been here a few days, and what bizarre days they had been. Before long, I would be in a boring routine, taking over so Oma could have some much-deserved time off. I took a few minutes to freshen up my digs. I filled two bowls with cat food, in case Twinkletoes brought Mrs. Muir home for dinner. I changed into a belted plaid skirt and a scoop-neck top in ivy. After running a brush through my hair, I pulled on boots and a suede jacket, then wrapped a long scarf around my neck. I grabbed my purse and Trixie's leash, and we were off. Ben and the ghost hunters were still clustered where I'd left them. Casper nuzzled Trixie, glad to have canine company again. "He's still questioning Eva?" I asked. "Can you believe it?" Mark swallowed hard. His jaw muscles tensed. The door opened and Dave walked toward us. "Holly, could I speak with you?" Eva emerged, looking none the worse for the interrogation. Under her breath, Eva muttered, "I need a drink." "You guys go ahead. I'll catch up," I said.
"We'll be at the barbecue place," said Felix.
Grayson ushered the group out. Dave and I sat down on the window seat in the library. He ran both his hands up his forehead and sighed. "Everyone had the opportunity, and no one has an alibi. Did Eva say anything to you about a weird light in her room?"
"As a matter of fact, she did."
"I don't know what to make of that. She says she doesn't believe in ghosts, but then she tells me this crazy story about a light in her room. Doesn't that seem contradictory to you?"
"Not really. Sometimes we see reflections of something. The day they checked in, an orb floated across the registration area. It had to be a reflection of some kind. I saw it myself. That doesn't mean I thought it was a ghost. It's her job to figure out stuff like that and prove it wasn't a spirit. It probably bothers her that she can't explain it."
Dave nodded. "Catch up to them and see what you can find out. One of them has to know something."
"What about Brian? He was outside that night, too, or he wouldn't have seen her. Says he went for a walk. He could easily have killed Mallory. Know of any reason he would want to?"
"He said something about asking her out. I gather she turned him down and he was offended. It sounds like all of them, except Felix, knew her one way or another."
Dave stood up. "More than one person has a motive."
"Who? Who has motives?"
"I can't tell you everything, you know. Besides, I'm not sure. See what you can dig up."
Rose and Oma chewed me out for asking questions that implied Doc is wrong and Mallory was murdered.
Dave's lips bunched up in anger.
"I find it painfully ironic that Doc says I'm not letting him do his job, but he cannot see that I have to do my job. The old guy made a judgment call, and now he feels like he has to prove that he's right. He keeps telling me there's no evidence of an altercation. The way I see things, it's his job to determine the cause of death. It's my job to find the evidence. I hope that Doc doesn't try to interfere because I'm not a little kid anymore. I have as much clout around here as he does. Maybe more."
We left the inn together, but Dave kept going when we reached Hot Hog. The entire group had gathered at a table with Mr. Luciano and the last person on earth I ever expected to see there, Aunt Bertie. She flushed like a young girl on a first date, raised one hand, and curled her fingers at me in a wave. Mr. Luciano appeared to be in his element. I said a silent little prayer that he would amuse Aunt Bertie and keep her away from me.
I gratefully accepted a chair near the opposite end of the long table, as far away from Bertie as possible, next to Ben and across from Mark and Eva. No sooner had I been seated than Holmes arrived with a group of locals who had been working at the cemetery. It took him exactly 1 minute to say, "Mind if we join you?" He shoved another table up to the end of ours and took a seat beside me. Introductions flew around the table. "Hey, Donna," he called to the waitress, "barbecued shrimp and cornbread for the whole table?" It was as though his mere presence transformed an ordinary dinner into a party. Beer mugs clinked against wine glasses and toasts. Not a single person around the table wasn't smiling or laughing. We shared the tangy shrimp and nibbled on warm cornbread with fresh country butter. And I was stuck between my dream man, who had his arm slung around the back of my chair, and my former boyfriend. Oh, joy! No one else seemed to notice. I decided Oma was right. I was too stiff and concerned about these things. I should relax and laugh and chatter with everyone else. To my complete shock, Bertie regaled everyone with stories of Wagtail in the 1800s. "The interesting thing about Obadiah is that he really did cure snake bites. Probably not all of them, but the original snake oil salesman sold tea tree oil or Chinese water snake oil, which really did have an effect on snake bites. It didn't take long for unscrupulous people to bottle any old thing and sell it as snake oil, and that's how snake oil salesmen got a bad name." Platters of ribs, glistening with deep ruby sauce, arrived along with pulled pork, French fries, lightly charred grilled ears of corn, and little white ramekins that nearly overflowed with creamy coleslaw. The lively banter subsided as we dug in. I did notice that Aunt Bertie skipped all the luscious, messy, sauced foods and primly ate her chicken breast with a knife and fork while the rest of us used our fingers. Trixie, Casper, and Mr. Luciano's bulldog, Gina, ate the Nothing But a Hound Dog special, which appeared to be pulled pork with kale, cornbread, and a few French fries as a garnish. They ate somewhat faster than we did. We were too stuffed to order dessert, which worked out well, because it was time to head for the cemetery. "Dessert afterward," we declared. During the walk across town, Eva sidled up to me. "I like Ben. He's a nice guy. He says you almost married him." I wish I could have been more ladylike, but that caught me by surprise, and I snorted. "Did he mention that he texted me a 6-letter proposal?" Eva laughed, a hearty, warm, life-affirming laugh. "Oh, no, 6 letters? Marry me." It took me a few minutes to sound it out and realize it was a proposal. These geeky guys are just clueless. I love them to death, but they don't understand romance at all. "Like Mark?" She turned her head and pulled away to look at me. "Mark, why would you say that?" "No, I thought I was picking up on something between the two of you." For a moment, I thought I saw fear flash across her face. She recovered quickly. "Ah, what about you and that Holmes fellow? My goodness, but he looked like he was staking out a claim." "No such luck. Holmes is engaged. We probably just seem comfortable together because we've known each other since we were kids." I tried to bring the subject to Mallory. "So most of the guys knew Mallory?" "I guess so. Not Felix, though. I'm no shrink, but I always thought Mallory's interest in Mark stemmed from her need to find a place where she belonged after losing her family. I wouldn't have coped with that well as a teenager, or even now. It must have shattered her."
"You mean because Mark is wealthy?"
"No, look at them. Grayson is pretty, definitely eye candy, but he's a follower, not a leader. Felix is adorable, but he's a little shy and goofy. Brian is just a kid in a grown-up's body. Poor judgment, never thinks things through. Mark is the only one of them who is solid and dependable. Takes action.
He's the security she lost when her family died. I've always thought she gravitated toward ghost hunters out of a need to believe that her family lived on somewhere else.
Who could blame her for that? I'm like you. I would have been a basket case. It dawned on me that Eva might be ready to spill some dirt about Brian now that he had reported her to the police. As casually as I could muster, I asked, "Did you see Brian outside on the night of Mallory's murder?"
23.
Eva shook her head.
"I didn't see anyone. I went outside to look for the source of the strange light in my room. Now I wish I had seen someone, because then I'd have an alibi."
I glanced ahead to be sure Brian wasn't in earshot and dared to come right to the point. "Do you know of any reason Brian might have disliked Mallory?" Her head snapped toward me again, her eyes wide.
"You think he killed Mallory?"
I shrugged. "He was outside in the middle of the night by his own admission." Eva appeared to think for a moment.
"Brian isn't the brightest guy in the world. That's why I'm often able to see through his tricks. If he killed Mallory, I rather suspect he would have taken the easiest route and simply lied about being out at night at all. It would have been more like him to claim he was asleep in his room."
It was a well-considered response. Academic, not phony.
"Unless," I said, "Brian thought someone caught him, like you." "I see your point. I'm not sure he's that clever. Though that little drama earlier today leads me to believe he might be quick to anger.
He claims that was staged for the show. Do you think Mallory upset him that night?
Who knows what goes through his boorish brain? She certainly made a production of her interest in Felix."
Eva lowered her voice.
"You know that he walked her home, right?"
"So I've heard." I still had trouble imagining that Felix could kill anyone. We paused before crossing the street to the cemetery. Costumed children, adults, and dogs milled about the church parking lot. While I couldn't see any electric lights, beams behind fog machines created mists worthy of horror movies. Candles and lanterns flickered in the dark. Holmes and crew had set up carved pumpkins along a broad path. They glowed with scary faces, sinister grins, polka dots, and some truly artistic depictions of witches and ghosts. In the background, ghoulish moans and witchy cackles were interrupted by clanking chains. I hoped the very small children wouldn't have nightmares. Scary guides with lanterns waited to take small groups of visitors into the foggy cemetery. One of Clementine's triplets ran screaming from a scraggly zombie in torn clothing. I found the frighteningly pale gentleman in a ruffled shirt, formal coat, and top hat more intimidating. A woman in a simple country dress with a white apron might have been reassuring but for her white makeup and dark circles around her eyes. Clementine's boys were fascinated by the guide with an arrow through his head. They readily accompanied him, along with Mr. Huckle, Clementine, and her daughter, who carried the ever-present stuffed dog. Inside the graveyard, white mists floated across the aging headstones.
"Oh, look!" Eva prodded me gently. "They've set up the Ouija board. This could be good."
"A fun show, you mean?"
"Kind of. I'll explain when it happens."
"A trick?"
"Not exactly. I'm going in on the tour. Want to come?"
"I'll wait. You go ahead." I watched as she hurried over to join a group. Surely it wasn't a coincidence that she was in a rush to join Mark's group. Right behind her, my own staid Aunt Bertie willingly joined a tour group with Mr. Luciano by her side. Unbelievable! She had a spark of fun in her after all. Lillian carried Glory B and chatted with Grayson and Mark while they waited to begin. It seemed like the whole town and all the tourists had turned out. A dog howled somewhere in the distance, setting off all the other dogs, including Trixie. Their melancholy group howl
sent shivers down my spine. One tour guide seemed very familiar. She wore a red tulle skirt and a hooded cape. Red fabric lined the hood. I stared at her. It wasn't until she flashed her fangs at Felix and Brian that I recognized Zelda. Laughing, I joined their group for the tour of the cemetery. Zelda regaled us with a mixture of spooky tales and lovely tributes to people who had lived in Wagtail. The group ahead of us shrieked in horror. Zelda cautioned us and walked forward, swinging her lantern. The light caught a coffin in the mist. Zelda had launched into the story of Hiram and Obadiah when we heard a creaking sound. The coffin opened with a slow screech to reveal a skeleton inside. Even Brian yelped and jumped back. It was all in good fun, and before we knew it, we were back in the parking lot. Felix and Brian led the way to the card table that had been set up with a Ouija board. 5 chairs circled it. Eva was taking a seat. Mark, Felix, Brian, and Grayson slid into the other chairs. Rose whistled like a sailor. "Quiet, please. The tours will continue after this presentation." The crowd hushed and clustered around. "And now," said Rose, "we will try to bring back the spirit of Dr. Hiram Montague through the use of the time-honored Ouija board." Like magic, an eerie orange glow illuminated the table and the participants. Ben ambled up next to me to watch. In a sing-song voice, Brian called out, "Mallory, Mallory, tell us who murdered you." Mark slammed his open palm over the moving pointer. "I told you we're not going to disrespect Mallory that way." Brian snickered at him. "What's wrong? Afraid she'll appear and tell the truth, Mark?" Mark's Adam's apple bobbed. Everyone agreed that it would be wrong to take advantage of her death by trying to contact her. "What's wrong with you?" Brian seemed chastened like a little boy. Mark called out, "Hiram Montague, Hiram Montague, we invite you to join us in our celebration tonight. Are you here?" 10 hands were poised over the Ouija board. 4 of the tour guides held lanterns and kept the crowd from closing in on the table. The pointer moved slowly to yes. I heard a few gasps and saw some people looking up in the air as though they thought they would see Hiram hovering over us. "Hiram, did you murder Obadiah Bagley?" intoned Mark. They had placed the pointer back in the middle of the board, but once again it moved to yes. "Is Obadiah here with you?" Another yes. "Send us a sign of your presence, Obadiah." The participants placed their fingers lightly on the edge of the table. For what seemed an eternity, nothing happened at all. There was some mumbling in the crowd. And suddenly, the table lifted at an angle. Aunt Bertie screamed, along with some of the onlookers. The table wobbled slightly and fell back into place. "How did they do that?" I whispered to Ben. "Must be a trick of some sort." The crowd fell silent in anticipation. Mark spoke gently to Aunt Bertie. "Try not to scream this time, okay? It breaks our concentration." Bertie flashed him an irritated look that I knew all too well. She didn't like being corrected. Mark sang out again. "Becca Wraith, we feel for you. Send us a sign of your presence." Once again, the participants poised their fingers near the edges of the table. We waited in silence. Just when I thought nothing would happen, the table lifted off the ground and moved so much that the participants had to stand up. The crowd shifted back to make room for them. Murmuring arose, and the table fell to the ground. The crowd broke into applause. The ghost hunter staggered over to Trixie and me.
That was exhausting. Felix rubbed his forehead. I've never done that before.
Mark laughed a bit giddy. I'm just glad it worked. I wasn't sure it would.
Come on, said Ben. There had to be a trick.
We were in the middle of the parking lot. There was nothing to which they could have tied strings. I noted that I wasn't the only skeptic. Several people had turned the table over to examine the bottom. I heard one of them say,
That's impossible. There's not a thing here. It's just an ordinary card table like I have at home.
Okay, Eva, how did you do that? I asked.
It's known as the Philip experiment. A bunch of Canadian parapsychologists invented a character who never existed. They tried to reach him, which clearly couldn't happen since he was a figment of their imaginations. Yet, to their surprise, the table where they gathered did exactly what you saw tonight. The general belief is that it's some kind of mind-over-matter thing, that the collective concentration of the group is able to make the table levitate.
Grayson nodded. I wasn't sure it would work for us, but we were willing to give it a try.
The original group was filmed, and the experiment has been reproduced by other groups, explained Eva.
You're pulling my leg. There was no way that could happen.
Ben drifted over to examine the table for himself.
No, no, insisted Felix. It's true. It can happen. It's the collective subconscious.
That's really scary. If a small group of people can raise a table, imagine what a crowd could do. My head reeled at the prospect.
Several of them nodded. I looked down at Trixie, who was listening in.
Do not try this with Casper to levitate treats off the counter.
She wagged her tail as though she understood and was laughing.
If Trixie ever learned how to levitate food, nothing would be safe. She jumped up and pawed at Brian's pocket.
Wrong pocket, silly.
He pulled a dog treat out of his other pocket and handed it to her.
Brian nudged me.
Who's the babe?
I cringed a little.
Where?
The blonde.
Clementine. Not that I could blame him for being attracted to her. Her long tresses almost glowed in the dim light. Clementine Wiggins. Fresh from a divorce, so tread carefully.
Is that your way of telling me to stay away?
I debated. It wasn't any of my business, really. It might give Clementine a boost to know someone besides Parker was attracted to her. On the other hand, she might not appreciate Brian's attention.
She's been through a rough time, Brian. I know she's not ready to date again just yet.
He didn't seem one bit put out.
How about the ghost woman giving tours?
I don't know her.
He wiggled his eyebrows.
Well, I am a ghost hunter.
He sauntered in her direction.
The tours resumed while the ghost hunters helped eager little kids have their turn at the Ouija board. The spooky clanking of chains and unearthly moans resumed. Before they wrapped up the events, Rose and Doc Kilgore prepared the graveyard for the official bone hunt. People lined up with their dogs. It was like an Easter egg hunt, but bone-shaped dog cookies were hidden around the fenced cemetery for dogs to locate with their sense of smell. Clementine's daughter was turned away because her dog was actually a stuffed toy. I hurried over and asked, "Would you like to take Trixie on the bone hunt?" She turned an eager face up to her mom. "Please?" Clementine was not happy. I knew that look. But she acquiesced.
"Don't drop her leash. I'll hold Lassie for you."
I recognize that dog. Is that the same Lassie you used to lug around everywhere? The hint of a smile crossed Clementine's lips. "Can you believe it?"
Holmes must have overheard. He joined us and said, "I remember teasing you because your Lassie was a Cocker Spaniel, not a collie."
"We've loved the fur right off Lassie's back, I'm afraid, but she's still holding up. My husband even took her to be restuffed and freshened up."
"Sounds like a nice guy."
"I'm sorry things didn't work out," said Holmes.
"Funny how you can live with a person and not know him as well as you thought you did.
I seem to be making that mistake over and over." Clementine shot me a look of daggers.
"What's the problem?" I whispered.
24.
"Holmes, would you take the boys over to the Ouija board table?" asked Clementine. "They've been itching to play with it."
"Sure thing. Come on, fellas. Do you know any ghosts you want to talk to?" The twins ran to the table with Holmes on their heels. Clementine crossed her arms, still clutching her old stuffed dog.
"I trusted you, Holly. I can't believe you went to Dave and blabbed about my problems."
"Sorry, Clementine, but you're angry with the wrong person.
I didn't say a word to Dave." I glanced over at Oma, but didn't rat on her. If I had to bet, I would put my money on the interim mayor of Wagtail running to the police about Parker Colby.
"You obviously told Holmes."
"Did not.
Everyone knows that you're divorced. What's the big deal about that?"
A long sigh shuddered out of her mouth.
"It's that stupid Parker Colby. He has me on edge. Look at him over there pretending he doesn't see us."
He was leaning against a tree, casual and unconcerned. "Did Dave talk to him?"
"Says Parker has a clean record. Dave asked him to stay away from me."
"And Parker said?"
"Some kind of garbage about being attracted to me."
"You're still beautiful. Maybe he was serious."
"Oh, please, not you too. I'm a divorcee with three small children and not a..."
Clementine winced.
"And more problems than anyone can imagine."
"Is there something I can do to help?"
"Find someone to rent the space where Putting on the Dog used to be. It's one of the biggest storefronts in town, just sitting there empty. If we had a tenant, it would produce a cash flow again, which would be such a big help."
"Parker said he was looking for an office for his dog magazine." She shot me a dirty look.
"I want him to leave town, not to stick around."
All three of her children ran back to her, clamoring for her attention. She addressed each of them, oohing and aahing in excitement with them. Her daughter handed me Trixie's leash.
"Trixie was very good. She was the first one to find a bone."
Why did that not surprise me? "Thank you for taking such good care of her." Clementine gave me a little wave. She joined Mr. Huckle, and they started across the street with the children. "Who was that?" Ben had sidled up to me. "An old friend, Clementine Wiggins." Ben watched her fade into the night. "Very attractive." "And acting very peculiar." Holmes loped up to us. "Ben, would you mind giving me a hand loading the coffin into Doc's golf cart? It's a little heavy for some of the scouts." Ben readily agreed. I hoped the scouts were stronger than Holmes thought, because Ben had trouble lifting a heavy briefcase. With the ghost hunters and scouts pitching in, we made short work of cleaning up. The general consensus was that there wouldn't be sufficient time to stop for a dessert at a restaurant, because the ghost hunters and their new pals, Ben and Holmes, had to be at Aunt Bertie's in about an hour and a half. Holmes prodded me. "I bet there's dessert in Oma's magic refrigerator." I bet there was, too. "Let's go back to the inn. I'm sure I can find something yummy." Trixie shook like a wet dog when I removed her leash in the lobby of the inn. "Are you glad to be able to run around with Casper?" She answered by trotting over to her new friend. Eva crooked her finger at Ben. He followed her to the cat wing. Holmes saw them and hurried after them. What were they up to? I couldn't help tagging along. Eva unlocked her room. "What's going on?" I whispered to Holmes. Eva promised to show us the flashlight trick. Oh, I wanted to see it too. It had been astonishing when I saw it live at the Wagtail Springs Hotel. Holmes closed the door behind us, and Eva fetched a flashlight. She held it out to us. "Care to examine it?" Holmes opened it and looked inside.
just a battery-operated flashlight. Looks ordinary enough to me.
Are there any ghosts known to inhabit this room, Holly? Asked Eva.
No, this is the new wing. It was built in the last few years.
Eva grinned. Okay, I'm going to turn out the lights. Is everyone ready?
She placed the flashlight on the dresser and turned off the overhead light.
If there is a spirit in this room, please acknowledge your presence by turning on the flashlight.
We waited. Seconds ticked by. Suddenly, the flashlight turned on. Ben gasped. Cool.
I understood why. It was quite impressive.
Thank you, said Eva. The flashlight went out.
Is your name Gooper? Asked Eva.
The flashlight flicked on immediately. When it turned off, once again she thanked the ghost.
Gooper, have you ever murdered anyone? If so, please turn on the light.
This time it took a little bit longer, but the light turned on again. Eva was laughing when she hit the switch for the overhead light.
How did you do that? Asked Holmes. It seemed like Goober was really here.
Watch the flashlight, she said.
Oddly enough, it flicked on again.
Eva picked it up and unscrewed the top. There are two tricks here. The easiest is to screw the top on just enough to make a loose connection. The light is turning itself on and off because the top isn't attached properly. The connection breaks and it goes out.
What's the second trick? Asked Ben.
Timing your questions right. Sometimes the light comes on faster than a ghost hunter expects. Of course, that's when he has to make a joke about the ghost being eager.
Are there other tricks that are this easy?
Holmes tried the flashlight trick, screwing the top on and off until he thought it was just right.
You'll probably see some tonight. Feelings are difficult to disprove. Sometimes I can find a draft in a spot everyone claims is cold because of a spirit presence, but it's nearly impossible to explain being touched on the shoulder or the sensation of being watched.
I thought some people are more open to spirits, said Holmes, like my grandmother Rose. She's seen them her whole life.
Eva nodded. Obviously, I can't see what they're claiming to see. It's fascinating to me that every culture has spirits and ghosts. Sophisticated cultures and primitive tribes, they all share in the belief of the supernatural.
Doesn't that support their existence? Asked Holmes.
There are a few things that everyone on this planet has in common. One of them is death. It only stands to reason, then, that all peoples need to develop a mechanism to cope with that. I wanted to listen to more, but everyone was in a rush tonight to get over to Birdie's to hunt for ghosts at her house.
I hate to leave this conversation, but I have to find some desserts. Excuse me.
I'll be there to help in a minute, called Holmes.
I walked through the dining area to the official inn kitchen. If luck was with me, I might find an entire cake or a platter of lemon bars. I opened the walk-in cooler to look around. Eureka! Cupcakes. Some had chocolate icing with candy corn pumpkins on top. Others had white frosting with spider webs. A few even had black Halloween cats on them. I retrieved a cupcake stand and loaded it up, thinking that I hadn't seen the black Halloween cat toy in a while. Trixie must have lost it.
Holmes stuck his head inside the door. There you are. What can I do?
Carry this into the sitting room for me, and then come back for the cups. I loaded a tray with cups, saucers, dessert plates, spoons, and napkins, and added a couple of dog cupcakes and some fishy-smelling kitty treats for Twinkletoes and Mrs. Muir. On another tray, I added creamer and sugar. Ben wandered in as I was making coffee. He adjusted his glasses.
Holly, I think I might have been wrong about you moving here.
I looked over at him in surprise.
I thought you were out of your mind to move to a remote place where everything revolves around pets. There's not even a Starbucks, which I still think is nothing short of barbaric. But I'm really enjoying the ghost hunters. Maybe they're not typical Sugar Maple Inn guests, but they're smart and interesting. I guess I'm starting to see what you like about Wagtail. He looked around. Where are your dog and cat?
They're not allowed in the official inn kitchen. It's the way Wagtail meets the state regulations. People food is prepared in kitchens where animals are not allowed. He frowned at me.
I'll have to check on that. It doesn't sound right at all. They shouldn't be in dining areas either.
Leave it alone. They worked it out long before I came here.
I mean it, Ben. Don't start trouble.
He nodded, albeit somewhat reluctantly. He brightened up.
Hey, are you coming with us to Aunt Birdie's tonight?
Why did it bother me so much when other people called her Aunt Birdie? I guessed she must like that title, but somehow it made me suspicious. When had she gotten to know Ben that well? She'd made a point of being Miss Dupuy to Felix.
No thanks, I need to get some sleep. While you guys snooze tomorrow morning, I'll be up and about.
I handed him the tray with the creamer. Take this and give it to Holmes. He'll know where to put it.
Like it's so complicated that I can't figure it out?
I ignored his sarcasm, poured coffee into a pot, and trailed along to the sitting room, where I made the rounds pouring coffee. Ben surprised me by being so comfortable that he looked like he belonged to the apparition apprehenders. I watched him engaging Felix and Eva in a lively conversation. What happened to my boring ex-boyfriend? The one who didn't believe in ghosts. Suddenly he was eager to stay up all night and go with him to Aunt Birdie's house? The Ben I knew would have rather curled up with a book in the privacy of his own home. And then it hit me. Maybe I was the staid one. All these people were excited about staying up most of the night to search for ghosts. I had seen my own great-grandfather's book fly off a table at Aunt Birdie's house for absolutely no good reason, yet I was much more interested in going to bed. But I cut myself some slack because I hadn't had more than a few hours' sleep since I arrived. Tomorrow I would lighten up. After they left for Birdie's, I dutifully lugged everything back to the kitchen, loaded the dishwasher, and turned it on so the cook wouldn't have to deal with dirty dishes in the morning. When everything was tidy, I took Trixie out to the doggy potty. Stars shone bright in the velvety sky. There wasn't a sound in the night. No wind, no voices, no ghosts, no cars, no barking. Just a peaceful night in the mountains. We headed upstairs to our quarters. Twinkletoes and Mrs. Muir were waiting for us, watching TV. I'd been here for days, and I still didn't know where the remote was. I used the button on the TV set to turn it off and headed straight to bed. With the ghost hunters entertaining Aunt Birdie and no one screaming in the middle of the night, I finally managed to get a decent night's sleep. In the morning, I was uncharacteristically energetic and ready to get going. Trixie opened her eyes briefly before rolling over to continue snoozing. I peeked into the kitchen, where steaming tea awaited me. With a bite of a chocolate croissant in my mouth, I opened the cat door for Twinkletoes and Mrs. Muir. I popped in the shower, blew my hair dry, and pulled on a black and white houndstooth dress. I fastened the narrow black belt at the waist and slid into black suede flats. I stepped outside on my balcony while I fastened silver earrings on my earlobes. The sun shone on Wagtail. The usual early birds ran or walked with their dogs and cats. A few people sat on park benches enjoying coffee. In spite of Mallory's death, I was brimming with happiness at being in Wagtail. When I went inside, I found Ben lounging in one of the cushy chairs, drinking coffee and noshing on chocolate croissants. Trixie sat on the huge footstool, trying out all her best begging faces. She raised a paw, but it had no impact on Ben.
"How can you sleep with all these animals around?" Ben grumbled.
"The cats clawed at the door until I opened it.
Then they jumped on the bed, over me, played tag, ran through the apartment, and returned to stare at me. Kind of like they're doing now. Twinkletoes and Mrs. Muir sat on the hearth. Mrs. Muir yowled a loud complaint.
They were trying to tell you to feed them.
Oh.
They shot to the kitchen ahead of me and rubbed against my legs while I spooned cheesy chicken into two bowls. Trixie ran back and forth between them and Ben, unsure where she might score a snack. I coaxed her away from the cats with a crunchy dog biscuit.
Does that old fellow bring you coffee every morning?
Mr. Huckle delivers tea to me, and he's off 2 days a week, so it's not every morning.
Ben yawned and scrubbed his face with his hands.
I thought you were insane to move here, but you've got it pretty cushy. This apartment is 4 times the size of my place, and you never have to cook. You just walk into a kitchen and help yourself.
I bit back the temptation to say, "Don't get too comfortable." I didn't have to worry. He would notice all the boxes again when he recovered from the surprise of pre-breakfast room service.
"Did you see any ghosts last night at Birdie's?"
Ben licked his fingers and frowned. I perched on the arm of the matching cushy chair with my steaming mug of English breakfast tea.
Did something happen?
I went along with them for fun, but by the end of the night, I have to tell you, Hall, I was reconsidering.
Aunt Bertie said you saw a book fly off a table?
I nodded. It was... I broke off as I searched for it on the shelf.
That's odd. I put it right here.
Elmer's diary? Asked Ben.
How did you know?
It was on the floor yesterday.
Did you know Elmer was a lawyer, like me?
Pretty interesting guy.
He eyed the big footstool.
That's odd. I left it right there.
It'll turn up. Anyway, I've examined it. I didn't see anything that would make it fly through the air.
It happened when we were there, too. Holly, I looked at the book myself. There were no strings, and it wasn't weighted. Like you said, it just flew through the air. Birdie said Elmer likes to toss books around.
They probably slide off the table, don't you think?
How about the Ouija board demonstration? That was the weirdest thing. They all had their hands above the table, yet it lifted.
They told you about the melding of minds thing, right?
Are you kidding? I looked it up right away.
I don't know. After talking with Felix, Mark, and Grayson, I have to wonder if I was too quick to jump to conclusions. They're pretty bright guys.
I wrote off ghosts as preposterous without much consideration. I'm going to have to give this some thought. It sure felt like someone was at Aunt Bertie's place last night. I could swear someone touched my arm.
I almost fell over. Ben? Believing in ghosts?
He stretched and yawned again. I expected the caffeine to wake me up, but I'm pooped. I'm going back to bed. Good night.
Good night.
I watched him stumble toward the guest room and thought it was very decent of me not to remind him that it was morning. After a quick trip to the potty for Trixie, we headed for breakfast. I was beginning to look forward to the fabulous breakfasts at the inn every day. Oma was already sipping coffee in the quiet dining area. Gingersnap lay at her feet and wagged her tail when she saw us. I pecked Oma on the cheek and said good morning. Stroking Gingersnap's broad red head, I slid into a chair. Due to the early hour, only a scant handful of non-guests had showed up for breakfast. With the ghost hunters asleep after a night of work, Shelley didn't have much to do yet. She brought mushroom and spinach crepes for Oma and me, and spinach crepes for the dogs. At Oma's invitation, she retrieved another crepe for herself and joined us for breakfast. We gabbed about Wagtail until Mr. Luciano arrived. Oma immediately invited him to join us as well. Shelley shifted into waitress mode just long enough to fetch coffee, orange juice, and a stack of pumpkin pancakes with pork sausage on the side.
"You are up early," said Oma.
Mr. Luciano waved his hand.
I don't stay up all night with the ghost hunters. No, no. Mark is in charge of them during their investigations, and I get my sleep.
Mr. Luciano cleared his throat.
Liesl, our stay at the Sugar Maple Inn has surpassed all expectations. Except for one small item. Has anyone ever suggested that you have a poltergeist?
Oma's eyebrows lifted.
This is a very old building. A few guests have reported ghost sightings over the years.
Shelley stopped eating. Her gaze darted around the room.
Your team is seeing ghosts in the inn?
25.
Nothing like that.
Mr. Luciano directed a reassuring smile at Shelley.
It seems things are being moved. Small items. Felix reported leaving a package of crackers on the nightstand of his room. When he returned, the bed had been made, but the crackers were gone. He found them later on the seat of a chair.
Oma tisked. I shall ask our housekeeper to be more careful. She probably moved them to dust.
They are such insignificant things that I wouldn't normally mention them at all.
Mr. Luciano speared a piece of pancake with his fork.
It sounds like a poltergeist. Brian left a pen on the dresser and found it in the bathroom. One of the cameramen seems to think someone went through his duffel bag.
Duffel bag? How would anyone know? They weren't like suitcases where everything would be orderly. Just picking up a duffel bag could dislodge an item. Oma frowned.
Is anything missing? No, no, you don't have a thief on your hands. Are you sure no guests have mentioned a possible poltergeist before?
While they chatted, my mind wandered. First, someone tried to sneak into the inn through the back door. Now, items were being moved around? Luggage searched? Could there be a connection? A thief who was looking for something?
Oma nudged me. Holly, Mr. Luciano asked you a question.
He graced me with an indulgent smile.
I hope you'll join us today at 1 o'clock, when we discuss our findings from our investigation at Birdie's house. Your charming aunt will be there.
Charming wasn't exactly the word I would have used to describe Birdie, but then she probably hadn't awakened him in the middle of the night to see if he would come to her rescue. I would love to attend. Are we serving breakfast again?
Shelley nodded. I can't wait to hear what they found. That Ouija board demonstration last night was something else.
Speaking of poltergeists, Mr. Luciano, when the ghost hunters checked in, a most mysterious orb floated across the wall. You wouldn't have had anything to do with that, would you? I asked.
Mr. Luciano roared. That was fun. A most appropriate greeting for them, don't you think?
How did you do that? I asked.
It was easy. I arrived a few days early, and Lillian was kind enough to help me experiment. All you need is a flashlight and a good hiding place. The balcony overlooking the reception area proved ideal. I could stand back far enough to be out of view from anyone downstairs. I simply turned on the flashlight, pointed it at the wall, and let it travel around the room. The beam makes a perfect glowing orb. I'm told it can also be done through a window, though I suspect that might work better in the dark.
After breakfast, I spent the morning with Oma, working out my responsibilities and setting up a schedule that would give her plenty of time off. I grabbed a quick lunch of crab cakes and salad with Shelley, then helped her set up the breakfast buffet for the apparition apprehenders in the sitting room. I hadn't seen Ben all morning. Now that he was a converted believer in ghosts, surely he wouldn't want to miss the apparition apprehenders meeting. I dashed up the grand staircase, gasping for breath at the top. Trixie beat me there, but showed no sign of being winded. I unlocked the door and strode in. To a mess. As if it weren't bad enough that boxes still cluttered the floor. Someone had spread shredded newspaper all over it. I hurried to the guest room and opened the door. Ben?
He rolled over and covered his eyes with his forearm.
What happened here?
Sleep. He turned to his side. Mr. Luciano is about to start his discussion of the findings from last night. Ben sat up fast.
Why didn't you say so?
What's with the newspaper?
What newspaper?
Out here. I left him alone to dress. He was pulling a shirt over his head when he stumbled in and saw what I meant.
What happened?
Don't you know?
I was asleep.
He had the decency to help me gather the newspaper shreds and deposit them in the trash. Trixie and I left him and rushed back downstairs to work. Eva arrived first, carrying a cup of coffee. She wore a turquoise dress with a boat neck and a brown leather belt that cinched her waist. The skirt flared out in generous folds. She kept her eyes glued on the mirror where we had seen Mallory's face, but she must have noticed me.
Any more appearances by Mallory?
Not that I know of. Have you seen Mrs. Muir this morning? Eva dared to turn her back on the mirror. She cocked her head and smiled. She was so cute. She came to my room and mewed outside the door. When I opened it, she walked in proud as she could be, holding her tail high, and your darling Twinkletoes followed right behind her. They jumped on the bed and snuggled down with us for a nap. They were adorable.
Us? Did she realize she'd said us? Or was her relationship with Mark common knowledge now? Did Dave know about it?
Eva smoothed her skirt, settled on a sofa, and patted it. Could we talk for a minute before everyone else arrives? I sat down next to her.
Sure, what's up?
She lowered her voice.
Has Ben ever done anything that made you wonder if you didn't know him as well as you thought?
Funny timing. Just this morning he said... She leaned over and whispered,
I'm afraid Mark killed Mallory.
She covered her mouth with both of her hands.
I can't believe I said that out loud. It's been weighing on me for days.
A shiver started at my head and zigzagged down to my toes.
Why would you think that?
Eva heaved a huge sigh.
Mark and I were engaged once, but Mallory came between us.
She set her coffee on a side table and fingered the fabric of her skirt.
I couldn't bring myself to forgive him for the longest time. I hated Mallory. I had been ready to marry Mark when she came along and ruined everything. Part of me blames Mark, of course. He didn't have to fall for her, to be seduced by a little vixen. But Mallory used people and knew how to stroke a guy's ego. She latched onto him like a tick. And suddenly, my future changed. No marriage, no Mark. I took a job in another town.
She sipped her coffee.
After a few months, Mark tried to get in touch, but I ignored him. I was too hurt. There was no amount of explaining that could ever help me overcome what had happened between us. But as time went on, my thoughts kept coming back to him, like we were destined to be together. When he contacted me about the apparition apprehenders, I thought he was trying to mend fences. I was ready to see him again, to find out if there was still a spark between us after all. We emailed back and forth. And honestly, it was like those years had never passed.
Now it was beginning to make sense. So you were expecting a romantic reunion with him.
Exactly, but when I arrived, Mallory was here.
Her eyes met mine.
I was shocked to see her. It tore me apart to know she and Mark were still an item and that everything he had said had been a big lie. You can imagine how furious I was. No, it was more than that. She closed her eyes briefly in pain. I relived all the dashed hopes that I experienced at my broken engagement. I thought Mark lured me here under false pretenses, hoping to spark the existing animosity between Mallory and me for the show. I hate that petty fights boost ratings. I was having none of it.
I will not be used for such base sensationalism.
But hadn't I seen her sneaking off with Mark?
You changed your mind about Mark's intentions?
Eva blinked hard.
I was mistaken. It wasn't easy convincing me that he and Mallory weren't an item. I'm not that foolish. I'm not a young girl eager to believe sweet talk. I guess that's obvious. I'm not easily duped. But there's no question that Mark still has feelings for me.
I didn't want to give her cause to reconsider, but the words slipped out of my mouth.
Then why was Mallory staying with him?
Eva heaved a sigh.
Yes, that disturbed me as well. Mark is a kind soul. I gather that in her quest to snare Mark, romantically speaking, Mallory made several surprise visits to Wagtail. During her last visit, she agreed to participate in the ghost walk this week, but failed to reserve a room. Then she came back and there wasn't a room available in town, so Mark capitulated, but told her this was the very last time she could bunk at his place.
I didn't know Mark the way Eva did, but I would be suspicious. Oma had said the whole town was booked solid. Still, if I were in Eva's shoes, and the woman who had been the cause of my broken engagement appeared to be shacking up with my boyfriend again, I don't know that I would have bought that story.
I'm still in love with him. I'm surprised. Deep inside, I hoped our reunion would play out with a happy ending, but I never thought I would feel this way. It's still there. We were meant to be together.
Oh, no. I really liked Eva. But didn't that admission put her first in line for murdering Mallory?
Eva released a shuddering breath. Mallory was such a pill. Mark was afraid she would come between us again. And then Mallory was murdered. It's like she's haunting me.
I nudged her in a friendly way. But you don't believe in ghosts.
She turned her head to glance at the mirror again.
I don't have to see her. I can't get her out of my head.
Maybe that's the reality of ghosts. Maybe they live in our heads.
I don't follow. She held her arms out as though she were embracing the world.
There's so much input around us. Sounds and smells and sights. Everywhere we look, there are a million details to take in. Our brains compensate by filling in the blanks. That allows us to capture what we need at a glance. Maybe when someone dies and we're thinking about them, our brains fill in blanks by adding them for a moment.
She brightened.
That would account for sightings where the ghost is gone in an instant.
But I saw Mallory in the mirror, too.
That's right, she scowled. So much for that theory.
Oh, no, here they come.
Please don't mention this to anyone.
Why did people keep asking me to keep their secrets, especially when danger was involved? I didn't know Eva nearly as well as I knew Clementine, but if Mark was a murderer, then Dave needed to know.
I stood up in a hurry, eager to avoid promising anything.
Casper bounded in with a moccasin in his mouth. Trixie ran to him to sniff his score. Felix carried an oversized mug, which I promptly filled with coffee.